Hi, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Recently, Maine became the first state in the country to use a vote tabulation system known as ranked choice voting. Backers of the plan say it ensures that the winning candidate has the support of a majority of voters. But opponents are concerned that it's too confusing, and as a result, it sometimes leads to election results that don't reflect the will of voters. Should ranked choice voting be used on a statewide basis in Vermont? Today on Vermont Edition, we're going to look at the pros and cons of ranked choice voting. And with us are Dover Representative Laura Sebelia, who is the lead sponsor of a tripartisan bill in the Vermont House that would set up ranked choice voting. And also Barry Town Representative Rob LeClaire, who serves as the ranking member on the House Government Operations Committee. It's great to have you both here today.
Thanks, Bob. Great to be here.
So let's start our program understanding exactly what ranked choice voting means. Representative Sebelia, how does this work? Walk us through this.
So it's actually fairly easy. Ranked choice voting requires a candidate to receive a majority of the votes in order to be elected. Not the most votes, but a majority of votes. And with a ranked choice ballot, you rank the choices in order that you want to see elected. If there are three candidates, you're free to vote for whichever one you truly like the best. And then you may be willing to deal with the second candidate, and you're not really a fan of the third candidate. And so you rank them in order, and all of the voters' then ranked ballots come together. We look at each of the candidates, see if anyone received a majority of the votes in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone received a majority of votes in the first round, we're all set. We're done. The people have spoken, 51%, 50 plus one. If we haven't reached a majority, we look to see who was the last place finisher, and we look at who their second choice was. And we take those votes and we move them to their second choice candidate. And then we look again. Does anybody have a majority? And if someone has a majority, then we have a winner. And if not, we go again until we hit a majority. So it's a way to really have voters be able to very clearly communicate who they want to see in office, who they want representing them.
So some listeners might be wondering, do I have to list a second choice?
You don't. You don't. You are free to, bullet vote, as it were, provide one vote. But if your candidate does not win, you've given up the opportunity to weigh in and say, well, if I can't have this candidate, I would be willing to have this other candidate. Ranked choice voting removes the so-called spoiler effect. A lot of times, I think probably all of us have experienced the situation where we're voting out of fear instead of really who we want to see elected. We're voting to prevent the candidate that we don't want to see elected from becoming elected. And ranked choice voting really removes that situation.
Is that one of the benefits, you think? I mean, why, when you're, as I mentioned, the lead sponsor of the bill in the House, your thoughts on why this is so important?
So there's two things that I think are really critically important that we get with ranked choice voting. One is increased voter turnout. When you really have a sense that your vote is going to count no matter what, if your first choice doesn't count, your second choice will, there's more of a motivation to go and not stay home. And the second is really increase in civility in campaigns. Candidates really need to be looking not only for first choice votes, they need to be looking for second choice votes. So I know you like John. But if John's not elected, you know, I think that I think I would be a great second choice for you. Here's and talking a bit more about policy and issues rather than bashing John, which is just not really a productive means of governing.
So your thinking is if you and I were running in a race, I'm not going to bash you because I want to make sure that your supporters might list me as the second choice.
Absolutely. And so I'm probably going to talk more about what I believe in and listen to the voters and hear what the voters are interested in than trying to demonize you.
Representative LeClaire, what do you think about this system?
Well, first thing I want to start off by saying is that this is really not a partisan issue. All it represents is just a fairly significant change to what we've been used to. A couple of the concerns around it is it's more about the mechanics of how this is going to work as opposed to, you know, just theoretically. In that, one, it's going to represent a significant change in that most of our elections, especially the local ones, are based on plurality. In other words, you know, who won the most, but they didn't win by 51%. Most, you know, select boards, representative seats, things like that. So you'd have to change the thresholds that you'd have to meet with that. Two, again, at first glance, it doesn't seem necessarily that complicated, but as you start to dive into it, you wonder if there is part of it that could be somehow manipulated. You know, you talked about the candidates not necessarily stating their positions because they want to appeal to more people. Well, it already feels like that you're trying to manipulate things a little bit. You want to get out there and if, you know, let's take like the marijuana debate. There's, you know, people that feel very strongly about it both ways. If I'm going to vote for a candidate, I want to know exactly where you're on these things. So it feels a little bit like it could be kind of a vanilla type of approach. And, you know, they did it in Burlington in 2009. I think they tried it for two elections and decided that it didn't work well. So they went back to the more traditional way.
So what about the concept that Representative Sebelia is telling us about, that using ranked choice voting ultimately leads to a candidate who has a majority of votes as opposed to a plurality? Because you could have an election with three or four relatively strong candidates, and the winning candidate could have 40% of the vote, right? Mm-hmm. Is that something that we should try to avoid?
You know, that's an excellent question, and there certainly that you could argue might be one of the benefits of that for sure. But to go through and get that majority candidate, there's a fair amount that has to happen for that to happen. And one of our concerns, again, it's more the mechanics, is we have a lot of communities that don't use a voting machine. They do all their voting on paper ballots and have to count them by hand. And as we've seen over time, sometimes that can lead to some challenging results and you end up having to go back through and do it again. And if you had a race that was a fairly close race and a recount was required, it looks like mechanically there could be a lot of confusion and it would not be a really easy process.
Today on the program, we're looking at legislation that creates ranked choice voting in Vermont in the primary election and also in the two federal elections. Your thoughts about this? 1-800-639-2211. Do you think it's a good idea? Does it help having the winning candidate get a majority of votes? Or do you think this is too confusing and maybe not the outcome that you're hoping for? Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Representative Sebelia, I remember looking at a congressional primary in New York State in the summer of 2018. I think there were 16 or 17 candidates in that race. The winning candidate ended up with 28% of the vote because you've got so many candidates in the race. But try to imagine a voter looking at a ballot with 16 names on it and trying to figure out, okay, so who am I voting for first here? Do I want to vote for someone second? Do you think that's a problem at all?
So I don't, actually. I think probably on a weekly basis, all of us go to restaurants. We look at a menu that, you know, has 10, 20, 30 choices. You know, if the waiter, if we come and we tell the waiter what we'd like and he or she says we're out of that, we're certainly going to have a second choice and probably a third choice and perhaps even a fourth choice. You know, Vermonters, Americans, we rank things all the time. Kyle Bailey, who I understand we're going to have on a little later, told a story yesterday. You know, the fastest group of people to really get this are elementary school kids. I mean, they're you know, what's my favorite crayon color? You know, which flavor ice cream do I like? We're quite capable of ranking. And as we talked about earlier, you know, you have 16 choices. You don't have to rank all 16 of those choices. So,
and Representative LeClaire, how about – I'm just looking at this from a philosophical point of view. In ranked choice voting, it's possible for a candidate – let's say you had four or five candidates in the race. It is possible for a candidate who came in second or third to be the eventual winner. And the first person had a plurality, but then as the votes were tabulated, it turned out that the voters for that fifth place person or fourth place or third place actually liked one candidate much more than another. And so the person who finished second or third ends up finishing first. Do you have a problem with that?
No, I don't. I don't think that I do have a problem with that other than we're changing the threshold that we've used for, you know, decades, if not a century, as far as we've gone from a plurality to now a majority. And if the voters decide that that's a good way to go, but, you know, we don't have a problem with too much voter participation in our country or in our state. We'd certainly like to have more. I've maintained for a long time that it's more about the candidate and the issues as far as what drives voter turnout. My main concern in others is just that we don't want to somehow see this be manipulated so that the true will of the voters is really what is reflected.
And Bob, you know, we see in probably about 10% of ranked choice elections, that case that you're talking about where the candidate that was not the plurality winner ends up with the majority of the votes. But about 90% of the time, you end up with the candidate that had the plurality also ending up with the majority.
You know, Representative LeClaire, you mentioned the Burlington mayor's race in 2009. It's really an interesting example of how ranked choice voting works. There were five candidates in that race: Progressive Bob Kiss, Republican Kurt Wright, Democrat Andy Montrall, Independent Dan Smith, and Green Party candidate James Simpson. So after the first round of voting with all five, Wright had 32%, Kiss had 28%, Montrall had 23%. Smith had 14 and Simpson had a little under one. So we take the two candidates, Smith and Simpson, and we take a look at their second choice votes. And after that round, we find out that Wright has 36%. He's still in first place. Kiss is at 33%. Montrall at 28%. Still, now nobody has a majority, so we got to have another round here, right? So we're going to look at the second choice votes of Andy Montrall. And by far, 2-1 margin, they are in favor of Bob Kiss. And Bob Kiss ends it up with 51% of the vote. So, Laura, in, from your point of view, this is exactly the way it's supposed to work.
It is exactly the way that it's supposed to work. And one of the details that we omit often in the Burlington discussion is that was the second election using ranked choice voting. The first election, Bob Kiss won with a majority. And so this was the second. And as you've just explained, the outcome it needed to be used. So the ranking method actually needed to be used in the second election.
So it's very important to stress that this is not used if the top candidate gets a majority of votes.
It's not. Yeah.
There's no need for it.
You're done. That's what we want.
Let's go to our callers and talk to Peter, who is calling from Braintree. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. My main comment is that ranked choice voting seems like it solves all of the problems, but it actually doesn't remove the spoiler effect. If you look at the simulations, there's a site that describes a very good comparison between a lot of different systems, and it ultimately proposes a different one, and that's rangevoting.org. It does a really thorough analysis, and basically if you start with scores instead of ranks, you get a much better outcome.
All right, Peter, you're going to have to run that one by us. How does that work?
The Olympics. If you think about how they score athletes in the Olympics, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
All right. Representative Sebelia, are you familiar with this?
I'm not, but, you know, I'm always interested in learning, so.
I've never been an Olympic athlete, so I've never been scored that way, so I really don't know.
Let's talk to Nathan, who's calling from Calais. Hey, Nathan, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of comments. I've been voting since, I'm 68, and I've always voted. And I have rarely gotten to vote for who I want. For example, for president. If there are three that are running, and I may want that third party, but I know that they don't have a chance of winning. So I will end up voting for the lesser of two evils, so to speak. And I would much rather be able to vote for who I want and know that my vote is not going to be wasted. As, for example, in the case of Sanders and Clinton and Trump, if this had been in effect at that time, it would be possible that they all three could have been running, and we would have Bernie Sanders as president right now. But nobody would dare vote for him because of the fact that they didn't want to waste their vote.
And maybe as another example, the presidential election in 2000 with Al Gore and George Bush and Ralph Nader?
Yes. Yes, there's another one. A candidate could not spoil the vote.
That's right, because if your candidate, if you vote for that person and they get eliminated, then you still have a second choice vote if you choose to do that.
Yeah. I have wanted this for 30 years. I thought of it as instant runoff. But I have always wanted this for, as I said, 30 years. And the first time it was mentioned to me. And I think it is the way a democracy should run. You should be able to vote for who you want.
Okay, Nathan, we appreciate your phone call. Representative Sebelia, this used to be known as instant runoff voting, I think, but now it's ranked choice voting. But it's essentially the same thing?
It is essentially the same thing. And it's really being considered in a number of different states, both in their legislatures for primaries. It's in use in a number of different countries and cities across the country already. And lest, may I offer another example where this could have played, lest we think that this is a partisan issue. Your friendly independent would like to tell you that my first year that I was here, we had to elect the governor. The legislature had to elect the governor because our Constitution says if there's no majority, that's what the legislature has to do. And we had a Democratic candidate and then two Republican candidates, a Republican and a Libertarian candidate. So Peter Shumlin, Scott Milne, and Dan Feliciano. And it's interesting to think about what a ranked choice voting result might have been there. Now, this proposal that we have in the legislature right now would not contemplate changing that outcome because that is a constitutional process that's already outlined. But this is not a partisan issue, which I think is important for voters to understand.
Today in the program, we're looking at legislation that would create ranked choice voting in Vermont for the statewide primaries and also for the two federal offices, U.S. Senate and U.S. House. Well, joining us right now is Kyle Bailey, who played a key role in the adoption of ranked choice voting in Maine. Kyle, welcome to the program.
So wonderful to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
So, Kyle, tell us, why did you feel so strongly that it was important for Maine to adopt the ranked choice voting system?
Well, you know, I sort of fell into this work because as a Maine voter, I'd experienced a series of elections, which some of the callers have, you know, had those similar experiences where, you know, there was a candidate I really liked the best, but the polls said he couldn't win. And every, you know, article that came out in the newspaper, every TV conversation about this race said, You know, is that candidate a spoiler? Are you wasting your vote? And, you know, the candidate that I liked in that race had 1,000 pages of really great policy ideas. And he needed to be able to stay on that debate stage and talk about those policies and hold the other candidates to account to talk about the issues. And it wasn't able to happen in that way because of the system of picking one candidate and plurality first past the post. It really makes it hard for people in those situations to not want to feel like their vote is wasted, to feel like they need to vote strategically. That's Maine's history, and voters have felt that for so long. When we brought ranked choice voting forward, we discovered there was a real hunger. And so thousands of Maine people picked up clipboards and pens and stood out in the middle of rain and winter storms and collected signatures. And now Maine's the first state in the nation to use ranked choice voting for primary and federal elections, and we couldn't be happier about it.
And Kyle, you had a situation in Maine where a governor was elected with less than 40% of the vote, didn't you?
Before this last this most recent governor's election, in 9 of the 11 preceding gubernatorial elections, the candidate who won received less than a majority. And in half of those races, we had elected a governor with less than 40% of the vote. So we'd been experiencing this sort of spoiler dynamic, so-called spoiler dynamic, these challenges of the needing to vote strategically and worrying that if you don't have a system in place for a runoff, and ranked choice voting is the most cost-effective and efficient way to conduct a runoff, if you lack that, it's possible that you're electing people who are actually opposed by a majority of voters. And that's problematic in a democracy. And it's also problematic because it may be that those politicians keep dipping right back into the well of their 35 or 40% of the vote, rather than reaching out and being accountable more broadly, and ranked choice voting helps to address those concerns.
So during the 2018 race in Maine, do you feel like that there was much confusion on the part of voters?
No, not at all. And this was a great news for us. And it confirmed what we had seen in cities across the United States and countries that use ranked choice voting is that, you know, in the first time it was ever used, 85% of voters said they were really familiar with ranked choice voting, you know, when they walked in to vote. And 95% of voters in the first use of ranked choice voting in the Democratic primary for governor, 95% of voters ranked more than one candidate. They participated in the process, and it also brought about a 7.5% increase in voter turnout. So voters were excited about the opportunity to rank their choices and to express their true preferences about the candidates. And I'll just note, you know, we did hundreds of presentations around the state of Maine leading up to the vote of ranked choice voting.
Well, I think we've lost Kyle. Kyle, are you still there? We've got Kyle on a cell connection. This says something about some issues that our lawmakers might want to be dealing with. Kyle, are you still there, or are we going to have to try to get you back on?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now. We lost you there for a moment.
That's okay. I just said there's one final note was we did hundreds of presentations in Maine about ranked choice voting. And some of those we went into elementary school classrooms because teachers, you know, it was a civics conversation. And I would hand out a ballot with your favorite color crayon. And before I could even explain how ranked choice voting worked, kids were handing their ballots up in the air because they'd already filled out the ballot. You know, so people innately know how to rank their choices. And if you rank, you know, the restaurant you want to eat at for dinner, and you rank the car you want to buy, and you rank your choices about which college you're going to go to, shouldn't you be able to rank your choices about the politicians you elect to make really important decisions for your state? And that's what ranked choice voting does.
One last question, Kyle. You had a congressional race up there, I believe in Maine's 2nd District, where the candidate who got the most votes, not a majority, but a plurality, the candidate who had got the most votes ended up losing in the ranked choice voting system. Do you have a problem with that?
I don't, because the candidate who won got a majority. So what was happening was we found there was vote splitting happening between the 3rd and 4th place finishers in that election and the candidate who ultimately won. And ranked choice voting allowed for voters to express their true preferences and ensure that the winner in that election was, in fact, the winner who was more broadly supported, who reached beyond their base, appealed more broadly for support. And actually, by a 2-to-1 margin, voters who liked those defeated candidates moved to the eventual winner. So that's what exactly what ranked choice voting is designed to do. Is you don't want to elect people to Congress or governor, you know, who a majority of voters oppose. And ranked choice voting helps work that out at the voter level. And it makes it about the voters and what they want, rather than parties, PACs, and politicians playing the games and pulling the strings.
Kyle Bailey, key player in the effort to adopt a ranked choice voting system in Maine. Many thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Representative LeClaire, we're hearing that makes things more civil because you don't want to really alienate the supporters of another candidate. And maybe most importantly, it eliminates this idea of the spoiler effect that, gee, I really want to vote for this third or fourth person, but if I do, does that mean that this other person is going to win? So what about conceptually, philosophically, do those ideas have merit?
I'm not going to deny that they do. However, there's, again, some of the mechanics that you have to take a look at. Like, for instance, I think the race that he was referencing, the congressional seat race, if that's the one I recall, it took him 10 days to figure out who the winner was going to be. Vermont, we're pretty used. If the polls close at 7 o'clock, we'd like to know who won at 7:15. Ranked choice voting, I don't foresee that allowing us to do that. You know, as far as the civility goes, we all want a civil campaign without any question about that. But you also want to have the opportunity to have a good, robust discussion about what the issues are. The other concerns that we have is not all seats would be compatible with this. Like, it's my understanding that you can only have one seat race. You can have several candidates for that seat, but you can't have like a multi-seat race and have it work. For our congressional offices, our constitutional offices like the governor, lieutenant governor, and so on and so forth, that would require a constitutional change because, as we all know, if it's under 51%, it does come to the legislature. Laura did raise a very interesting point in the election that she was referring to. With ranked choice voting, we probably would have had a different governor. We would have had a Republican governor in that race because if I understand ranked choice voting, that's probably what would have happened.
Laura, do you think that's true? I mean, you listed that as where the third place votes could have been enough to help the second place person catapult over the first place person.
It certainly could have been. You know, it's definitely a question in my mind. We've had a number of elections that have been primaries. You know, we had five Democrats running for governor a number of years ago in that primary. You know, that might have been a nice way to have a majority weigh in on who the eventual candidate should be. I do want to note that it is possible to use ranked choice voting in multiple seat districts. It requires, rather than a majority, you end up using a threshold number. So what is the threshold that's required in order for two people to be elected? It's a little bit of a different calculation, but it is possible to use that.
And I imagine that it's a whole lot easier to do this system with some kind of computerized tabulation. If I remember correctly, in the Burlington race, the results were known that evening because it was just a matter of going through the first round and nobody had a majority of votes. So the tabulation system could look at the second place votes. So it'd be really helpful to have that kind of system, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. And one of the great things about this proposal, first of all, we have a Secretary of State who supports the concept of ranked choice voting and understands what's needed for that. We also have an elections system that is looking to replace. It's already – we have planned replacement of our tabulators, which are likely to come in able to do ranked choice voting. And third, we have as another sponsor on this bill, a town clerk, another independent like myself, Representative Kelly Paella. Very intentionally, we wanted to have that support because we think understanding the questions, concerns, challenges that our election officials may face, the public information that they require to explain to their voters, we want to make sure is provided as part of this.
Let's go back to our listeners and talk to Gabriel in Burlington. Hi, Gabriel. Welcome to the program.
Hi. So I just really wanted to talk about briefly. I moved to Vermont from Maine pretty recently, and the main argument I heard about ranked choice voting when I lived in Maine was the idea of it's compromising the idea of one single vote per person. And I thought that was interesting because the way I consider it, at least, is you still get your single vote, but it's actually applied towards a candidate for which it's going to matter. Because if you vote for a candidate that doesn't make it through the first round, your vote's still going to matter and you're still going to be able to influence the election.
Yeah, it absolutely fulfills the one person, one vote requirement of our elector system.
Let's talk to Joe from Burlington. Hi, Joe. What's on your mind today? Joe, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
We sure can.
Hi there. I have a question that you may have touched on. I've heard of a different system that's very similar, where someone could win the majority, but have enough third rankings, for example, that through some calculation they wouldn't win the vote, and that's sort of done to minimize super divisive politicians. So technically you could win a majority of number ones, but enough number threes that you wouldn't win. Is this similar, or have you heard of this?
I have not heard of that.
Oh, almost by definition, and correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Sebelia, since ranked choice voting only comes into play if you don't have someone who gets a majority of votes, if someone does get a majority, this system never gets used.
Right. Precisely.
So, Joe, we're not exactly sure what the circumstances are there, but maybe somebody else can help us out. Today in the program, we are looking at ranked choice voting. There's legislation at the State House to use it in primary elections and also the two federal elections. Representative Sebelia, some of our listeners might be wondering, why don't we just have a regular runoff? So, we have five candidates in the race, take the top two. I mean, a number of states do this, right? They take the top two candidates and we'll have a runoff in a couple of weeks.
So this is by far the most efficient and cost-effective means of conducting a runoff. You've done it. You have already asked people what's their second choice. A number of southern states actually use this for all of their elections are runoff, right? So instant runoff if you don't have the majority. And they do these ranked choice voting ballots for military members overseas because you don't have the time that's required when you conduct these second and third elections.
Representative LeClaire, would you prefer a regular runoff?
Well, that's a really good question. I'm struggling to remember the last time we actually had one. There's a little bit of this. It feels it's a little bit of a solution in search of a problem. I don't recall the last time we had a runoff. I know we've had several recounts. So, she is correct in that if you did have to have a runoff, there's certainly going to be an added expense with it. But again, I don't remember the last time we had one.
Well, how about that governor's race in 2014 when Peter Shumlin did not get a majority of the vote, mm-hmm. right? And Dan Feliciano came in third and Scott Milne was in second. Would you have preferred – and then the election went to the legislature, right? Would you prefer a system where you say, okay, the top two were Peter Shumlin and Scott Milne. Let's have a runoff in 3 weeks.
Well, that's an outstanding question. We didn't have that as a choice. What did happen isn't totally unique. It's happened, I think, several times over our state's history. But that's a situation where you could say that, IRV would have made the difference and quite quickly.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Betty, who's calling from St. Johnsbury. Hi, Betty. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a member of the League of Women Voters of Vermont, and we've supported ranked choice voting for these single seat races for quite a long while, since 1999. And I really thank Rob LeClaire for stating very clearly that this should be a nonpartisan issue. I thank you for reaffirming that. It was previously supported in the House by Republicans as well as progressives and Democrats. My comment today is specifically about his concerns regarding the mechanics, and you know, Australia has been doing ranked choice voting for a variety of offices and quite widely now since 1917. So they didn't have the advantage of these computers and all. And Ireland does ranked choice voting. And even today, though they could use computers, they prefer to continue doing it the hand counting way. And so I would like to encourage folks to think of this as not being insurmountable by any means, and that you know, depending on how you choose to write the bill, you can have very little extra work on the town clerk's part, and there's no extra work if you do get majority winners the first go round. And then more recently than when I first called in, Representative LeClaire was saying about Vermonters' concern about having a fast response. Well, we don't get a fast response on the governor's race. And evaluation back in 1999 had figured that depending on how you wrote the law, you could actually meet those constitutional requirements for those three offices specified in the Constitution, the lieutenant governors and treasurer's races. But even though this bill doesn't currently include those, this is a very feasible bill, and people would be fine, I'm sure, with the amount of extra time to get a clear winner who was supported by the majority of the voters.
Betty, thanks very much for your phone call. We really appreciate that. Let's talk to Ben in St. Albans. Hey, Ben, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I just wanted to say something about ranked choice voting. I think it's really very simple. I think it's basically like if you're out to dinner, you're with 10 people, and let's say three of you want pepperoni pizza, three of you want sausage pizza, and four of you want, let's say, lima beans. Well, you're probably going to go with a meat pizza. It's, you know, 6 out of 10 want that, and only 4 out of 10 want the lima beans. Maybe decide, you know, if you want the pepperoni or the sausage pizza. So that's basically what we're dealing with here. And I also wanted to say that, you know, democracy in America right now, we're kind of losing it with the Electoral College. You know, it gives more votes to land area than population. And the Senate is the same way. We give more votes to land area in the Senate than actual population. So we really just want to have one vote for one person and not throw your vote away with the spoiler effect.
Okay, Ben, we appreciate your phone call very much. Let's turn to Leslie in Westminster. Hi, Leslie. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I actually just wanted to follow up on what I think it was Betty had called in earlier. I actually also heard about the elections in Ireland, and it was very interesting in terms of keeping a paper ballot and the value of slowing down the process because it creates enthusiasm for the election. And so the fact that it's sort of a back and forth and no one really knows how it's going to play out, they found increased the interest in the election. So I think that's something to keep in mind.
Okay, Leslie, thanks very much for your phone call. Let's turn to John in Richmond. A lot of folks interested in this topic today. John, tell us your thoughts.
Hi, Bob. I think, unfortunately, that this is too simplistic a response. You've got primary voters that are voting on one system. You know, are they caucusing or whatever? We've got an open primary system. So you can walk into a primary vote and pick up whichever ballot you want. So there's no party affiliation. You've got, if you take ranked voting to the general election, it reinforces party because unlike a menu in a restaurant, there's not a description on the ballot that says what this person stands for. So you don't get the list of ingredients. And most importantly, I think a runoff should be required. I think having a majority of votes is a laudable goal, but I don't think efficiency is the best judge of that. I think that the runoff should be after the results. You determine what those parameters would be, and then both the candidates and the voters get to see the results and then adjust either their positions as a candidate or their votes as a voter based on those results. It's an interactive thing. We take all the interactivity out of it if we make it a simple mechanical listing. I disagree from a philosophical perspective that this is an improvement, unless there are major revisions to what I'm hearing in the bill as it exists. Thanks.
Okay, John, we're very much hearing about your point of view, Representative Sebelia, your thoughts on how John is viewing this.
Yeah, I think I have a lot of faith in Vermont voters in our little state who have a tradition of also electing independents to we've got five, one of the highest numbers in the country. And, you know, one of the challenges with independents is, you don't necessarily know where they're going to come out. They have to get out and talk with voters. And, you know, all of our this really encourages all of our candidates to do that. And particularly in the House with Rob and I mean, we know the House districts are so small. Members are going out and knocking on doors of all parties. And so I think Vermonters are capable of handling this type of choice.
And we should remind voters that you've been elected independently.
Three times.
So this, as we've stated several times during the program, this is not a Republican, a Democrat, a progressive, or an independent issue. It's really, it's coming from a very different perspective. Almost out of time. Representative Sebelia, tell us, where do things stand now? Are you hoping that government operations in the House might vote on this year, or is it going to be pushed over to next year?
We are so grateful to have gotten some great hearings in both House and Senate government ops. We're planning a number of public education sessions throughout the summer and fall, and we look forward to coming back and working with the committees to get this passed next year. But we've had a great start, and we're folks that want to follow our progress, we have a website up, www.rankedchoicevt.com.
And Representative LeClaire, as you see the Government Operations Committee considering this bill, is it possible to tell where the committee stands on this at this time, or is there more testimony that's needed?
Well, I think we'd need a bit more testimony because it is one of those things that it's a fairly substantial change, and part of our job on government operations is to look sort of behind the scenes and see how it's going to work at the Secretary of State's office and with the town clerks and just make sure that it does what's intended to do.
We're going to be following this issue closely in the weeks and months ahead. Many thanks to our guests today, Representative Laura Sebelia and Representative Rob LeClaire. Thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us, Bob.